record. We'll conclude with Mr. Peterson and then address the briefing question. Are there questions from the commission for Mr. Peterson? You're excused. Thank you.
Well, you would enjoy that.
Sorry for the dramatic buildup and the anticlimax.
You're fine, Commissioner.
Okay, now that we know that Mr. Peterson won't hold that against us, what do council have to say about briefing this question of the meaning of 5417805-3B? Ms. Hogle?
The company would like the opportunity to brief.
Okay.
The division would as well and believes it would be most helpful to the commission.
The office's position is that if you think you want additional information about that, legal briefing is the way to do it.
Okay.
I am happy to provide a legal brief and may even put a Christmas bow on it.
We'll look forward to that. Mr. Dodge?
My view is that if the commission thinks it would be helpful, we're happy to provide it. We would request that it not be limited to one legal issue, because I think the legal issue quickly spills over into other arguments, and I don't know how you limit it other than by page numbers. So if you call for post-hearing briefs, we'd be more than happy to brief it. We'd request a page number limitation rather than an issue limitation.
Ms. Roach?
Yes, Your Honor. If the commission so requests, we'd be happy to provide.
Is there any objection to the scope of the brief being just applicable to the proceeding, the issues in the proceeding generally, as long as it's addressing legal matters? And what do we think about page limitation? 10?
10?
10 pages adequate? Is that suitable? Yes. And what would you like from a timing perspective? December 24th? December 26th? Yeah.
I think it would be helpful to have a transcript to assist in the briefing process.
Sure, it would.
So perhaps a time period after the transcript is available would help.
Sure. And that's likely to be 1 to 2 weeks, so... Oh, it was mid-January work. Does that seem reasonable? You have a calendar in front of you, Mr. Dodge. You want to suggest a date for us?
I do, and I was going to say I think mid-January is a good time to shoot for, the 15th or the 16th. The 15th is a Thursday. I think some people don't like Friday deadlines.
15th work? Then it'll be the 15th, 10-page limit, and the scope will be legal issues that have arisen in the context of the hearing. Anything my fellow commissioners want to add to that? Or okay. Anything further, Ms. Schmidt?
Nothing further. Oh, one question though. Will there just be one set of initial briefs, or will there be reply briefs as well?
We had only contemplated one round, but we're always open to counsel's feelings on these matters.
I would suggest just one round.
The company would support that.
I support that.
Okay.
Can I? I apologize. I have to throw a tiny wrench into something. I am out of town on the 14th and the 15th. I know that some parties dislike Fridays, but I respectfully request that the deadline be moved to the 16th so that I can submit this.
Any objection to that?
No. Thank
okay.
you.
It'll be the 16th then. January 16th, 2015. Anything further, Ms. Schmidt? Okay. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Your Honor. We'd like to call Cheryl Murray.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much. Please be seated.
Ms. Murray, would you please state your name for the record, please?
Cheryl Murray.
And where are you employed?
I'm employed with the Office of Consumer Services at 160 East, 300 South.
And what is your job title?
Utility analyst.
Did you prepare direct rebuttal and surrebuttal testimony in this matter?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any changes or corrections to the testimony or the documents that you submitted?
No, I do not.
We would move then that the direct rebuttal and surrebuttal be admitted as evidence.
Any objections? They're received.
Thank you. Have you prepared a summary in this matter?
Yes, I have.
Could you please provide it for the commission now?
Yes. I had prepared a brief summary, and due to Mr. Taylor's testimony this morning, it is now exceedingly brief. Throughout this process, the office's goal has been that no cost caused by Schedule 32 customers be shifted to other customer classes, including those represented by the office. That remains our position. Regarding the administration fee, the office supports the company's administrative fee proposal provided by Mr. Taylor this morning. And regarding the capacity contribution credit, as I stated in my testimony, it's the office's view that the statute appears to be prescriptive in regard to the capacity contribution credit, and a rate design revision may be required to provide a solution. If the commission wants to consider different capacity payment options, the office asserts it should solicit legal briefs, as has been decided this morning already. And that concludes my testimony.
Ms. Murray is available for cross-examination.
For Ms. Murray.
The company has none.
No questions, thank you.
No questions.
No questions, thank you.
From the commission. You don't get to redirect, Mr. Olson.
Doggone. Maybe later.
You're excused, Ms. Murray. Thank you very much. Ms. Hayes.
Thank you. Utah Clean Energy would like to call Ms. Wright as its witness. Ms. Wright will need to be sworn.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Good morning, Ms. Wright. Will you please state your name, title, and business address for the record?
Certainly. My name is Sarah Wright. I'm the executive director of Utah Clean Energy, and our business address is 1014 2nd Avenue, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84103.
Did you file direct rebuttal and surrebuttal testimony on behalf of Utah Clean Energy in this docket on September 9th, October 9th, and December 2nd, respectively, in this docket?
Yes, I did.
If I asked you the same questions today, would your answers be the same?
Yes.
I request admission of the pre-filed testimony of Sarah Wright.
Any objections?
No objections.
It's received.
Have you prepared a summary of your testimony that you'd like to present today?
Yes, I have.
Please go ahead and give that.
Thank you. So Utah Clean Energy is a nonprofit public interest organization whose mission is to lead and accelerate the clean energy transformation. We look to stop energy waste, create clean energy, and build a smart energy future in the most economic means possible. We see the implementation of SB 12 and Schedule 32 as an important means to leverage private investments in clean energy to help achieve an economic transition. We appreciate the Utah legislators' efforts to provide the opportunity for large energy users to purchase or develop renewable energy projects in excess of what Rocky Mountain Power provides to their customers. Our goal in this docket is a tariff that is reasonable both for participants and non-participants. In the interest of collaboration and finding a hopefully workable solution and to get this program started, our positions have evolved over the course of this docket. While we are not sure whether a tariff structured as laid out in our SIR rebuttal testimony will work for customers wanting to build or purchase off-site renewable energy, we think that our recommendations that align with UAE's recommendations and some of Rocky Mountain proposals and others offer a reasonable and reasonably clear approach. Utah Clean Energy generally supports the concepts as proposed for Schedule 32 as laid out in the direct testimony, Table 1, of Mr. Kevin Higgins for UAE, as well as some of the resulting proposed tariff adjustments made by Rocky Mountain Power in their rebuttal testimony. Specifically, Utah Clean Energy recommends the following. Customer charges. We support the customer charges as proposed in the rebuttal testimony of Mr. David Taylor for Rocky Mountain Power. Administrative fee. We are supportive of the proposal that Mr. Taylor put forth today. And with respect to the delivery charges, we support the delivery charges as proposed in the direct testimony of Kevin Higgins of UAE. With respect to demand charges, we support UAE's proposal for the more granular hourly power charges, as Mr. Higgins characterizes them as shaping charges, or as characterized by Mr. Higgins as shaping charges, although we refer to them as demand charges, because they are based on the hourly maximum demand. And we support that in lieu of the daily power charges as proposed by Mr. Taylor. The hourly demand calculations, as proposed by Mr. Higgins, is a tool for more fairly calculating the monthly billing for Schedule 32 customers. It allows Schedule 32 customers to receive some credit for the capacity contribution associated with the renewable energy portion of their energy. It does not impact the entire energy, their entire energy base. For their renewable energy contracts, in proportion to the actual generation and peak hours. And that concludes my summary.
Ms. Wright is available for questioning.
Cross-examination for Ms. Wright.
None from the company.
None. Yes, if I may.
Mr. Olson.
Ms. Wright, do you have your testimony?
I do.
I could have you look at your rebuttal testimony, lines 137 through 140. I think it's on page 7.
I'm not quite there yet, but. Somehow, my binder, I have two directs.
I get that. All right. Well, there are
so
a couple
I apologize
ways.
For that.
What do you need? The rebuttal?
Rebuttal would be great. I have it as well. Thank you. I'm sorry, which lines?
I'm sorry. You know, I've made a mistake. That is, it's in your SIR rebuttal. Do you have that?
Yes. I'm sorry, which lines?
Starting on 137.
Mm-hmm.
There it says, you say, in existing general service tariffs, such as 6, 8, and 9, only one 15-minute interval factors into the monthly metered kilowatt demand measurement. However, because Schedule 32 does not yet exist, its monthly metered kilowatt demand measurement has not yet been defined. Is that
yes, correct? That's correct.
Well, Ms. Wright, isn't it true that by defining demand significantly differently in Schedule 32, that customers of similar size with similar load profiles will be given preferential treatment if they choose to take power pursuant to Schedule 32 rather than 6, 8, or 9?
I'm trying to remember the conversation that we just had. But this is a completely different tariff, and it's just like backup generation is completely different and held out, as I understand it, from the other customers that they're... You're right, I'm not an expert in the rate design, but as I understand it, these customers are a separate customer class.
They are a separate customer class, but would you agree that treating them differently could create preferential treatment to them relative to other...
Well, treating them not differently could also create preferential. So it could, but it could also, by not giving them any credit for the renewable energy that they provide, could create preferential treatment in reverse.
Okay, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have no questions.
I have no questions.
Questions, or I guess redirect first and then questions from the commission.
No questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank
That's
you.
Right. You're excused. Mr. Dodge.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. UAE calls Kevin C. Higgins.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Mr. Higgins, would you please give us your name and your business and for whom you're appearing?
Yes, my name is Kevin C. Higgins. I'm a principal in the firm Energy Strategies. My business address is 215 South State Street, Suite 200, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84111, and I'm here on behalf of the UAE Intervention Group.
Sir Higgins, in this docket, UAE pre-filed your direct testimony, labeled UAE Exhibit 1.0, with attached UAE Exhibits 1.1 and 1.2, as well as your surrebuttal testimony, labeled as UAE Exhibit 1.0 SR, with an attached UAE Exhibit 1.1 SR. Does that testimony represent your testimony here this morning?
Yes, it does.
And do you have any corrections to it?
I do not.
I would move the admission of the UAE exhibits I just referenced, Mr. Commissioner.
Any objections? They're received.
Mr. Higgins, could you please provide a summary of your pre-filed testimony in this case?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. The task before the Commission and the parties in this case is to design rates to implement Senate Bill 12. The question at hand is, how do we design rates that are just and reasonable and which will allow retail customers to import renewable energy consistent with the intent of Senate Bill 12? The rate schedule that Rocky Mountain Power has proposed for implementing Senate Bill 12 is Schedule 32. As an initial matter, I believe that customers choosing Schedule 32 service are likely to pay a premium for the renewable energy that would displace their purchase of Rocky Mountain Power supplied generation. Potential Schedule 32 customers may be willing to pay a premium for renewable energy for various reasons, including societal considerations or to meet certain corporate objectives. I believe that in implementing Senate Bill 12, we should be striving to design rates that allow customers to evaluate this likely premium for renewable energy on a level playing field relative to purchasing all of their generation service from Rocky Mountain Power. This means that we should be very careful not to add any additional premiums to the economics of this decision that are purely the result of the artifacts of rate design. If we add additional premiums of this sort, we run the risk of thwarting the legislature's intent in passing Senate Bill 12. Schedule 32 is a type of partial requirements service, and as a general proposition, Designing rates for partial requirements service is a challenging task. To that end, Rocky Mountain Power has done an admirable job in structuring Schedule 32 into three interrelated services. Number one, delivering the contracted for renewable energy. Number two, filling in or shaping the power required by the customer when the peak amount of contracted for renewable energy is not fully available. And number three, providing the supplementary power service beyond the contracted for amount of renewable energy. So the division of the rate schedule into these three services is a useful construct. Over the course of this proceeding, the company and UAE have reached agreement on most of the structural issues and rates proposed in this case, leaving only two issues in contention between us. But let me start with our areas of agreement. First, I agree with the company's proposed treatment of supplementary power and energy and have no recommended changes to the company's proposal for that service. Second, I agree with the administrative and customer charges proposed by Mr. Taylor in his rebuttal testimony and as further refined in his testimony this morning. Third, I agree with Mr. Taylor's rebuttal proposal to establish a separate set of Schedule 32 rates for customers with billing demands below 1 megawatt, which corresponds to Schedule 6 service. And fourth, I agree that the base energy charges for shaping power, or called backup energy charges by Mr. Taylor, should be the same as the energy charges on the customer's otherwise applicable rate schedule. Now, with Rocky Mountain Power and UAE having agreed to the structure and rates for these various components of Schedule 32, it allows us to focus on our two remaining areas of disagreement, which are the calculation of the delivery facilities charge and the rate design to recover demand-related shaping costs. I'll start with the delivery facilities charge. The disagreement between the company and UAE on this issue is relatively straightforward. The company's proposed delivery facilities charges are based on the delivery facility revenue requirement for Schedules 6, 8, and 9 in the company's class cost of service study filed in the last general rate case. In contrast, my proposed delivery facilities charges are based on the delivery facility share of costs embedded in actual Schedule 6, 8, and 9 rates. Now, if rates were set exactly equal to the revenue requirement for demand and energy in the company's cost of service study, then the company's approach and my approach would produce the same answer. However, in Utah, the result of the company's cost of service study is just one factor among several that are used in setting rates for full service customers. In general, the actual rates in the company's tariff do not match the company's cost of service study results. And this is certainly true for Schedule 6, 8, and 9. As a consequence, under the company's approach, Schedule 32 customers would pay higher effective rates for delivery service than their counterparts who take fully bundled service under Schedules 6, 8, or 9. Now, Mr. Taylor said in his summary today that he doesn't understand this criticism that I'm making because the company doesn't have unbundled rates. And I agree, the company doesn't have unbundled rates. But if you assign the proportion of delivery costs that are in the cost of service study to the actual rates and come up with the share, the proportion represented by those, then you would see that that is a smaller delivery charge than what Mr. Taylor has calculated using the cost of service study on a standalone basis without regard to how rates have actually been set. And so if you don't attempt to design your delivery charge off the actual rates, then you're going to have a mismatch between what Schedule 32 customers pay and what customers pay who are on the fully bundled service. And that's going to distort the economics of making this decision. In fact, you know, it would be, in fact, an unwarranted premium in the Schedule 32 rate design that would unreasonably thwart implementation of Senate Bill 12. My recommended approach, which Mr. Taylor acknowledges is reasonable, corrects this problem. Now, finally, I'll turn to my second and remaining disagreement with the company, which is the recovery of demand-related costs for shaping service, which Mr. Taylor refers to as the daily power charge. The daily power charge proposed by the company for Schedule 32 is intended to recover the demand-related costs of supplying power to the customer during hours in which the customer's renewable generation is less than the contracted amount. This is essentially shaping service, which, depending on the resource, the Schedule 32 customer may very well need on a daily basis. For example, a Schedule 32 customer importing generation from a solar resource will see its import reach its peak during the middle part of the day and then start to decline as the sun moves toward the horizon. In general, the solar resource will not produce any energy after 8 p.m., even in summer. So the customer will need to make up the difference between the output of its solar import and its renewable contract amount by purchasing the necessary shaping power from the company. And since Rocky Mountain Power's on-peak period extends until 9 p.m. in the summer, the Schedule 32 customer must purchase all of its generation from the company in that final hour of the on-peak period. Now, as a practical matter, the company's proposed daily power charge will require the customer to pay its demand charge for the day based on its demand in that final hour. What this means is that a Schedule 32 customer who delivers reliable solar capacity for 7 hours out of the 8 summer on-peak hours during a summer day will get absolutely zero credit for this capacity against the on-peak demand charge. That is, the daily power charge for this customer will be the same as if this customer brought in absolutely no renewable capacity at all during the remainder of the day or the earlier part of the day. In my opinion, this result is fundamentally unreasonable and is largely an artifact of the rate design for full-service customers. My proposal is to make the daily power charge more granular by converting it into an hourly on-peak shaping charge. This approach solves this problem by providing the Schedule 32 customer with a pro rata demand credit for the renewable energy capacity the customer imports during the on-peak period. And at the same time, if the Schedule 32 customer provides no capacity during the on-peak period, my approach would charge that customer the full amount of the demand-related cost for that on-peak period. It would simply be recovered through this hourly on-peak shaping charge, but it would recover all of the demand cost. That is how the rate was designed. Thus, the rate is designed both to be compensatory to the utility and yet still reasonably acknowledge the capacity contribution by the Schedule 32 customers' renewable energy imports. I believe this approach strikes the proper balance the Commission should be striving to achieve in implementing Senate Bill 12. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. A couple of quick follow-up questions with respect to testimony today. Mr. Peterson referred to your surrebuttal testimony, and I would refer you to page 10 of your surrebuttal, in which he stated something to the effect that he thought you essentially conceded that your hourly shaping charge became converged into an energy charge. Do you have any response to that?
Well, sure. Mr. Peterson read an excerpt from my testimony, and the excerpt he read was, by making this charge more granular, it indeed converges to an on-peak energy charge, as Mr. Taylor contends. And I agree with that. That is my testimony. But, of course, I go on to say, however, there is nothing wrong with that. Given the unique character of this aspect of Schedule 32 service, that is, providing shaping and backup power to customers who bring external capacity to the system, recovering demand-related costs through the hourly on-peak shaping charge is perfectly appropriate. Both the company and I have departed from the literal interpretation of measured demand in Schedules 6, 8, and 9. Neither one of us has proposed that that definition be used for purposes of Schedule 32. To the company's credit, they took that maximum monthly demand and they made it more granular. They said, let's look at it on a daily basis. And I think that that was a good faith step forward in trying to address this issue, this question. Unfortunately, it has absolutely no benefit to the type of resources that I believe the legislature probably intended by this passing Senate Bill 12. That is, it will do absolutely nothing for a solar resource. So I simply took the company's idea, a good idea, and just took it one step further. I just made it, instead of making it a daily demand charge, I made it hourly. The same set of costs are involved. If a customer doesn't bring any resource to the table, both approaches charge that customer for the full demand charge that they would have otherwise paid. I have simply made it more granular by focusing on the hourly capacity that the customer brings to the table and the hourly need that customer might have to purchase from Rocky Mountain Power to provide the deficit between what its resource brings and what its contracted amount is.
Thank you. And Mr. Higgins, I'm not going to ask you, turn the page, if you will, to page 12 of your SIR rebuttal, beginning on line 240. You've laid out there Senate Bill 12. There will be legal briefing on this, and I'm not asking you to address in any manner the legality. But I'm asking you, in your expert testimony, why you believe, or in your expert opinion, why you believe that your proposal flows from and is consistent with the statutory language that you read.
Sure. If we look at the statutory language, Part 3 identifies the customer's burden, if you will. In other words, Part 3 tells us, before we get to the subparts A, B, C, and D, Part 3 tells us what the customer shall pay. So if you look at that language, both Rocky Mountain Power and UAE have proposed what we think the customer should pay. And this, if we look at this language here, it tells us that a qualified utility that enters into a renewable energy contract shall charge a contract customer for all metered electric service delivered to the contract customer. Now, Rocky Mountain Power defines what metered electric service delivered to the contract customer means in the Schedule 32 tariff. And in the case of the daily peak power charge, that is defined within Schedule 32, and it is not the same definition as Schedules 6, 8, or 9. I think that's perfectly appropriate. How, under my proposal, again, subpart 3 here, the metered electric service delivered to the customer, to the contract customer, is also defined in Schedule 32. So the burden on the customer, the charge that the customer must pay, is laid out in the main body of 3. After that, we have a series of customer protections. There are certain costs that must be excluded from this charge. So A, B, C, and D don't tell us what must be paid. 3 tells us what must be paid. A, B, C, and D tell us what must not be paid. And if you look at B, which is the source of some contention in this hearing, I would say that both the company's approach and my approach pass. That is, the requirements that the customer must pay are laid out in 3. Then you get to subpart B, it tells us that any kilowatts of electricity delivered from the renewable energy facility that coincides with the contract customer's monthly metered kilowatt demand measurement must be excluded. Well, the company does this by excluding the portion of the customer's peak demand on a daily basis. That is their measurement that they use. They take the monthly metered kilowatt demand measurement, and they look at it every day, and they decide what the customer shall pay and what part gets excluded. My approach does a very similar thing, except it looks at it every hour. It looks at every on-peak hour that customer's measured kilowatt demand in the month. And my approach also excludes what the customer, the amount of that coincides with the capacity the customer's bringing to the table. So I would say that you know, without offering a legal opinion, it strikes me that both the company's approach and the approach I'm advocating would pass this test. So the question then just comes down to, okay, which approach is more reasonable? Which approach is more consistent with the legislature's likely objectives in passing Senate Bill 12? And I would put it to you that I believe the approach I'm recommending on this issue better balances the objectives the commission should have in this in setting this rate design.
Thank you. I have no further initial questions, and Mr. Higgins is available for cross.
Just a few.
Ms. Hogle.
Just a few. Mr. Higgins, would you agree with me that you were not involved in the drafting of this statute that you were just testifying about?
I was not involved. Counsel to UAE was involved, as I understand.
Thank you. And you are not a lawyer, correct?
I am not, although I'm required to associate with them as part of my job.
Okay. And just one more question. Do you support converting the demand component of any rate to an hourly rate for all retail customers?
No, I do not. I think that it's absolutely unnecessary to do that. I think that the rate design for Schedule 6, 8, and 9 are in their current form are reasonable. But I also believe that when you are faced with a special category of service, which partial requirement service is, you need to look at the objectives and the essence of the nature of that service. And it's entirely reasonable to have a different definition of billing demand and a different way to apply demand charges when you have a service in which to qualify for the service, you have to bring renewable energy to the table. That's a criteria. You have to be bringing something to the table to get this rate. And so I think that whereas the rate designs for 6, 8, and 9 don't need any changing, it's entirely appropriate to have a specialized rate design for what is a very specialized type of service.
Under Schedule 31, how is that design different from the one that you're proposing?
Well, Schedule 31, of course, differs from Schedule 6, 8, and 9. And so it already departs from the billing demand definitions in 6, 8, and 9, which is entirely appropriate. But Schedule 31 uses a daily measurement of demand, which I think is reasonable, or maybe reasonable for Schedule 31. I didn't testify in the Schedule 31 proceeding. And with respect to Schedule 32, I believe that making that daily peak demand charge even more granular is entirely appropriate when you consider that the resources that would qualify for allowing a customer to take Schedule 32 service are renewable energy resources that by their nature, take solar, by their nature are not going to be fully available during the fully defined on-peak period for Schedules 6, 8, or 9. And so in order to address what was the reasonable intent of the legislation, it's necessary to ask further questions and ask if we can refine the good idea the company put forward and make it a better fit for these types of resources.
So isn't it true that you want to make an exception to current rate design because solar and wind are intermittent resources by what you're proposing?
I would say that Schedule 32 should have its own rate design. And I don't view it as an exception to rate design because we already have the other rate schedules designed, and we have definitions of billing demand. But the legislature, not UAE, not me, the legislature has adopted a law that provides that customers are entitled to be able to purchase this product. And I think it's incumbent upon the commission and the parties to this case to try to find a way that applies rate design in such a way that it doesn't thwart the intent of the legislature. The rate designs we have for Schedule 6, 8, and 9 were never intended to serve customers who are bringing in renewable energy from the outside. They were designed for full-service customers. So I'm not looking to make an exception to rate design. I am simply trying to apply good rate design to the circumstances of this service.
Ms. Schmidt.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In your testimony and here today, you talked about solar and wind as renewable resources. Is that right?
Yes.
Are they the only type of renewable resources that the legislature has defined as renewable resources, renewable energy source?
No.
So geothermal energy is a renewable energy source located outside the state.
Question? Is that a, yes.
Yes. Okay. Waste heat and waste gas are defined as a renewable energy source. Is that right?
Yes.
Is it possible that geothermal could provide, I'll just call it product, during summer and winter peak hours?
Yes, it is.
And is the same true for waste gas and waste heat?
Yes, it is.
Turning to the statute, specifically 5417-8053, and recognizing that you are not a lawyer, and please recognize that I'm not an economist, I've got just a question. And this question is based on your plain reading of the language and your plain knowledge of the word's definition. Is it your understanding that the word coincide means that things occur at the same time? And I'm looking at your testimony on line 251, where you present the section of the statute that uses that word coincide.
The answer to your question is yes.
Let's talk about how a customer's monthly metered kilowatt demand measurement is made now under existing tariffs. And we may have touched on this, but I'd just like some clarification for my benefit. How is the monthly metered kilowatt demand measurement done now under Schedule 9?
Well, you have the measurement of demand, which is done using a demand meter, which looks at 15-minute loads that are registering on the meter. And so you have the measurement of demand, which takes place over all of the hours of the month. Then you have billing demand,
okay,
which is different from measured demand. Billing demand is a definition of how you get charged for your demand. And so the company takes the measured demand, which is basically the raw data, and for Schedule 9 customers, say, it will take the peak, the maximum demand that occurs during the on-peak hours, and that becomes the customer's billing demand as distinct from its measured demand. Its measured demand is the information that the demand meter is collecting for the purpose of allowing the company to come up with a billing demand.
So let's move to your shaping charge concept. What portion of your shaping charge would occur at the same time as a Schedule 9's customer's monthly meter demand or meter billing demand, the two things you defined?
They would coincide 100%. That is, I would have the company take its monthly measured demand data and look at it every hour. And for every hour in which the customer is deficient in importing its renewable energy relative to its contract amount, the customer would pay that hourly shaping charge in the amount that it is coming up short. So it would be, in fact, an hour-by-hour coincident charge. It would not simply be based, say, on the maximum that occurred on a day or a month, but in fact, it would be, like as I said, granular. It would perfectly coincide with the capacity the customer is bringing into the system every single on-peak hour.
And that is different than the way that it is measured for, say, Schedule 9.
The measurement is the same. The definition of billing demand is different. The definition of billing demand for Schedule 9 is the maximum demand that occurs during the on-peak period. The definition of billing demand for the company's proposal is the maximum that occurs in a day. So it's different from Schedule 9's billing demand. They're both using the same measured demand, but they are using different definitions of billing demand. So Schedule 9 has a billing demand based on the maximum in the month. The company takes the same data, but picks out the maximum every single day, and you have a different charge for every single day. Mine simply looks at every single hour of the on-peak period, and there's a charge for every single hour of the on-peak period that you require the service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Thank you.
I have no questions.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
No questions. Thank you.
No questions. Thank you.
Redirect. Questions? I have a couple.
Okay.
Mr. Higgins. From the company's presentation in this matter, are you able to tell how Schedule 32 service, as it's proposed, would be treated in a general rate case cost of service study?
I would say that it's a safe inference that it would be treated the way Schedule 31 is, which is that, it's not typical to take a partial requirements rate schedule and to run it through a cost of service study. Rather, what you do is you say, okay, this rate schedule has some of the same characteristics of rate schedules that we are running through. So its rate design has some nexus to it. It's not exactly the same, but there's some nexus to it. And you take the revenues that you would expect to recover from this partial requirements service, and you treat it as a revenue credit against the overall revenue requirement that would otherwise apply. So that's what I believe the company would likely do with this rate schedule in the future. I don't know that for sure, but that's my guess as to how they would handle it.
What type of service precisely is offered under Schedule 31, if you know?
Well, Schedule 31 is offers backup and maintenance and supplementary service for on-site generation as a general matter. So it's a type of partial requirement service.
Mm-hmm. And it's already clear in the record, but the pattern in that schedule is to have demand or capacity evaluated on a daily basis rather than the hourly as you proposed for Schedule 32, right?
That is correct. And I'll note that there is no size limit on the overall amount of capacity that can be purchased under Schedule 31, but the legislature did put a cap under Schedule 32, 300 megawatts. And so whereas they might have some similarities in the type of service that they are, Schedule 32, you know, has been called out separately by the legislature. And so I think that even though there are some similarities between 31 and 32, I think the commission should feel free to have the latitude to identify or come up with the rate design that would specifically fit the Schedule 32 customers. And, you know, bearing in mind that the legislature itself capped the amount of load that could qualify for this tariff, for this rate schedule.
Thank you. Mr. Dodge, any follow-up?
No, thank you.
You're excused, Mr. Higgins.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you. Ms. Rhodes.
Yes, Walmart would like to call Mr. Chris to the stand.
Please raise your right hand. You solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Thanks, Mr. Chris. For the record, will you please state your name and position and address?
My name is Steve W. Chris. I am Senior Manager, Energy Regulatory Analysis for Walmart Stores Incorporated. My business address is 2001 Southeast 10th Street, Bentonville, Arkansas, 72716-0550.
Thank you. Can you briefly describe Walmart's operations in Utah?
There we go. Walmart operates 53 retail units in Utah, and approximately 51 of those stores are under Rocky Mountain Power. We have approximately 16,000 associates, and we purchase $1.9 billion worth of goods and services from Utah-based suppliers, supporting about 26,000 supplier jobs in the state.
Thank you. Have you previously prepared testimony in this document? Docket, excuse me.
I prepared direct testimony.
At the time that you prepared the testimony, was everything accurate in the testimony that was filed?
Yes.
I'd move for the admission of the direct testimony of Steve Chris, filed on September 9th, 2014.
Any objections? It's received in evidence.
Mr. Chris, were you present during this morning during Mr. Taylor's testimony?
I was.
And in light of that testimony, can you summarize your recommendations to the commission today?
Sure. My direct testimony dealt with the proposed customer and administrative fees from Rocky Mountain Power's initial filing, as well as the setting of the distribution and generation backup charges. A number of things have changed since Rocky Mountain Power's initial filing. They did address the Schedule 6 issue by creating rates that for the less than 1 megawatt customers. And then Mr. Taylor proposed this morning a more unbundled administrative fee. My understanding of that fee is that it would be $110 per month for generation data, regardless of the number of contracts involved. I'm going to look for Mr. Taylor for a big nod, yes. Well, for each generator for each month. And then an additional $150 per month per contract for all customer accounts that are involved. So if we have one generator and five accounts, we would pay $110 in a month for that generator, and then we'd pay $150 per account for the five accounts. And that is my understanding. My understanding is also that Rocky Mountain Power does not propose a cap for the number of accounts. Walmart supports this change, including not capping the number of accounts.
I have no further questions.
Thank you. Cross-examination. Ms. Ogle. Okay. Mr. Dodge.
No questions. Thank you.
From the commission. Thank you. You're excused.
Thank you.
I have a couple of housekeeping matters before we conclude. Is there anything else from the parties before we conclude our hearing today? I think there are.
Commissioner Clark, if I may, I would just ask that when we're off the record, if I could just have a couple of minutes, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. And I note that there are a couple of parties who filed testimony who aren't present today, beyond those that have already been mentioned. And I just want the record to reflect that the commission will receive that testimony as public comment in this docket. I also want to, recognize that as far as we're aware, this is Mr. Taylor's last appearance in a formal way before the commission after 30-something years of being here on a regular basis. We wanted to acknowledge that, Dave, and wish you well in your future endeavors. Thank you. And if there's nothing further, we'll be off the record.